Today on Annenberg Radio News.
We went and knocked on the room, and there was four naked men in the room. They said, look, we know what's going on. If you don't leave in 10 minutes, I'm calling the police.
We hear tales from the night shift at a Hollywood hotel. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, May 1st, 2014. I'm Bryony Ng. Firefighters are still trying to contain the Etiwanda fire near Rancho Cucamonga. Firefighters have been working on the 1,000-acre fire since yesterday. It's only about 10% contained. Strong winds have interfered with efforts to fight the fire with aircrafts. 1,700 homes were under evacuation order yesterday, but those evacuations have been lifted. Several schools in the area were closed today. If you have a job, consider yourself lucky. It's May Day. May Day is also known as International Workers' Rights Day, and millions of undocumented people can't find jobs. In Chinatown today, over 40 organisations gathered to support workers and rally for greater wages and rights. Sam Dawn was at the scene.
It was a brutally hot day in Los Angeles, but that didn't stop the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights from coming out for workers' rights. The day started with Burger King and Walmart employees marching to ask management for wage increases. Demonstrators started at the Burger King on Cesar Chavez Street, walked across the street to Walmart, and then to the entrance of Chinatown, where the main rally was held. Burger King management refused to speak with the ralliers, but Walmart management did respond.
When they're individual with our
I understand, but you know what? You have taken retaliated against workers working. That's my policy.
One of the main speakers at the event was Richard Reynoso, a Walmart employee. In his 3 years of working at Walmart, he has only received a wage increase of 80 cents.
And it's just really just all these groups coming together in solidarity to support one another because we understand that each one of these fights are still interconnected, and that's the way to show our true powers to come together as one.
The main focus of the day was on workers and immigrant rights, but workers' rights groups weren't the only demonstrators. There were groups supporting causes as varied as gay marriage, environmental protections, and women's rights. Kathy Deppe of the Clergy and Laity United for Economic Justice is involved in the women's rights movement.
For women to win equal pay, I think, is the most important thing that would help women and their families thrive.
There were thousands of people at the rally today. But the question is, what's next? Supporters aren't necessarily expecting policy changes. Instead, they say their main goal is to raise awareness of the issues. Sam Dorn, Annenberg Radio News.
And the postseason drama continues for LA's NBA teams. The search is on for a new head coach for the Lakers after Mike D'Antoni resigned yesterday. Jenna Pittaway looks at what's next for the Lakers.
For the third time in 5 years, the Lakers are looking for a new head coach. Mike D'Antoni resigned after the team decided not to extend his contract past the third year. D'Antoni coached the worst season in Lakers history. Eric Pincus writes for the LA Times blog Lakers Now. He says there were other reasons for the split.
Fans in Los Angeles certainly didn't like him. He wasn't really the right fit for the roster, and it just didn't work out. Mostly not his fault in the sense that the players were hurt.
Today, Pincus posted a poll on the LA Times to see who fans want as the next Lakers coach. He says it's too early to call a front runner, and he thinks the most important factor is finding a long-term fit.
They need to get a coach that they really believe will be their coach for a long time. So they're just going to have to find the best talent out there, the best coach out there, and someone who's got the vision to see the big picture long term and maybe the connections to try to help lure some of those free agents.
Pincus does have a personal favorite for the job, head coach of the UConn Huskies, who just won the men's NCAA national championship.
I personally think that Kevin Ollie is the ideal coach, both in how he communicates with players, how he coaches on the floor as far as X's and O's. And he also has ties to Kevin Durant, who he played with in Oklahoma City.
Kobe Bryant's uncertain future makes top talent a priority for the Lakers. Pincus says the team is unlikely to name a new coach before the draft lottery later this month. Jenna Pittaway, Annenberg Radio News.
Music fans will be tuning in tonight for first ever iHeartRadio Music Awards on NBC. Celebrities Pharrell Williams, Ariana Grande, and Blake Shelton are scheduled to perform. The show will air live from the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles. Awards will be determined by how many times listeners gave a thumbs up to their favorite songs, created their own stations, or used Shazam to discover music. For the weather. Keep the sunscreen handy as the heat wave is set to continue for the next few days. We'll see highs of 97 tomorrow and 90 on Saturday. By the end of the weekend, things will be cooling off with some clouds appearing by Sunday. Later on Annenberg Radio News, hear how the LA County Sheriff's Department is mired in scandal and which candidate in the race looks most likely to be able to fix it. Now we continue our series looking at the people who make Los Angeles run, the night shift workers, the minimum wage employees, and the undocumented laborers. In the final part of this series, we go to Hollywood. The neighborhood is famous worldwide for movie stars and limousines, but it isn't always glamorous. Brianna Sachs took a look inside the Dunes Inn, where night shift hotel workers get a look at just how wild the area can be.
So here's your TV remote. It's going to be room 205. All right. Here's your
ID and
your credit card.
It's about 9 p.m. on a Thursday. Front desk clerk Curtis Swain slides a small, thick TV remote and room key through the small hole cut into the Dunes Inn bulletproof glass window. The front desk faces Hollywood Sunset Boulevard, and Swain settles his large frame into the creaky wooden chair to talk about his most recent incident on the job.
And I had to kick somebody out of 106 because we just kept seeing guys in and out every 10 minutes. Boom, boom, boom. We went and knocked on the room, and there was four naked men in there. And I said, look, we know what's going on. If you don't leave in 10 minutes, I'm calling the police.
Normally, though, working a night shift is not that exciting. It's the kind of job that
destroys me the next day, especially if I've got to go to school in the morning.
Front desk clerk Peter Rowland joined Swain in the office.
Late at night.
He had to stop doing the night shift because
I felt that my day was wasted because I was in bed most of the day for at least 3 days a week.
Usually, the 8 hours drip by without a distraction.
It can be very boring.
It can also be really lonely. So Rowland would fill the empty room with this. Rowland wipes his gray hair out of his face while bending down to turn up the dial on the old silver radio plugged into the wall.
They have some good concerts in the middle of the night.
Rowland has been a clerk at the Dunes for 25 years.
I've seen it through his slow times and his good times.
As he checks credit card receipts and marks down no-show customers, he reflects on the night a cop was killed outside room 230.
No, I didn't know anything about it until the police started coming in. The person wasn't even a guest in the hotel. The policeman that got shot went up to the room and knocked at the door, standing in front of the door. So the guy shot through the door. So, of course, the place was locked down. There were some Japanese boys, I remember, about four of them, checking in at the time. So they had to come back here into the office. And I didn't hear the gunshot. All I know is that we saw the policeman lying on the walkway around her.
Rowland says the room now has a legacy with Hollywood cops.
Quite often, police cars driving around and stopping briefly on the other side and pointing up to the room. Every time a new policeman joined the force, they brought him round and showed him where this happened.
The Dunes has seen its fair share of shootings, from suicides to the LA riots. Swain tells one infamous story involving one of the Dunes' owners before the bulletproof glass went up. A few years ago, Swain says a man was trying to rob one of the front desk clerks.
He heard it, came over with his 45, saw him with the shotgun, and went boom, boom, shot him twice in the back. And the guy turned around and shot him in the hip with the shotgun. So the guy took off. He ended up living, but they caught him because they followed his trail of blood around the corner.
And as any night shift Hollywood hotel clerk can tell you, dealing with prostitutes is an everyday thing.
About Hugh Grant and that prostitute, Divine Brown, and the paparazzi, they came and they offered me $10,000 to tell them the room number.
And you didn't do it?
No. She had a limousine because she got paid a lot of money. And she used to come in and he said, do you know who I am? I felt like saying, yes, I know who you are. And I was going to tell her who I thought she was.
But Swain and Rowland say the area is a lot better than it used to be. Hollywood is changing and the nights are more quiet and dull. There's a sense of calm around 2 and 3 a.m. that never used to exist.
Sure, used to back in audit was really bad with, you know, prostitutes and stuff like that. It's just the homeless people once in a while, you know.
The bulletproof glass is now just a precaution for night workers like Swain and Rowland, who deal more with tourist complaints than shootings.
Sanchez,
okay.
Yeah, room 110.
And who now choose to walk home as the sun rises for the exercise.
I'm on a big diet right now because I gained weight here. You sit. I used to eat a bunch of junk.
Brianna Sachs, Annenberg Radio News.
An NBA committee is meeting today to talk about the next steps in removing LA Clippers owner Donald Sterling. Sterling was banned for life from his team this week after racist comments he made were released to the public. Stephanie Case has more.
It's been 2 days since NBA Commissioner Adam Silver announced Sterling's ban, but there's already talk about who will take over as owner. Downtown at the Staples Center, where the Clippers will take on the Golden State Warriors later tonight, fans were split on who they thought should replace Sterling.
I would love to see Magic own it.
The dream owner would be Magic, of course.
I'd give it to Floyd Mayweather. That's my opinion.
Oprah. She's awesome. She does everything.
She gives all over the place. I think it's a good candidate for her to be.
A big possibility is Magic Johnson, who, along with the Guggenheim Trust, own the Dodgers. Also in the running are a list of billionaires, Oprah Winfrey, software giant Larry Ellison, and DreamWorks co-founder David Geffen, who announced yesterday that they were interested in bidding on the team as a group. The trio is worth about a combined $60 billion. That's more than three times the net worth of the NBA's current wealthiest owner, the Portland Trailblazers' Paul Allen. And the Guggenheim Trust is worth more than triple that, over $200 billion. ClipsNation.com's Lucas Hand says this gives them an edge.
I would say if Johnson and the Guggenheim Group decide that they're interested, then they will definitely be able to purchase the team. If they pursue the team, they'll be able to outbid anyone. But unlike Geffen, Ellison, and Winfrey, they haven't yet announced that they're going to make a bid.
Hand says either group would be a strong move.
You know, with Magic Johnson as the figurehead, would definitely be making a strong statement, especially after Donald Sterling's specific remarks towards Magic Johnson. Even with the other group, with Oprah Winfrey being involved, I think there's a strong statement by having an African-American owner, regardless of which group between those two ends up getting the team.
But before anyone new can take over, the NBA must decide how to move forward with Sterling's case. According to the NBA Constitution and bylaws, the Board of Governors would need a 3/4 vote, that's 22 of 29 owners, to force Sterling to sell the team. Hand says that a unanimous vote is close to a sure thing. And if Sterling is forced to sell, he could make close to $1.5 billion. In the upcoming weeks, the NBA will decide on the next steps. Stephanie Case, Annenberg Radio News.
The countdown has begun for the LA County Sheriff's race next month. As candidates battle it out, I spoke to Max Schwartz, a fellow Annenberg journalist and host of the Hot Seat podcast, to find out the latest. Hello, Max.
Hello, Bryony.
You're here today to talk about the sheriff's race. LA County voters will be picking a new sheriff soon from a pool of 7 candidates. What's so different about this year's race?
First, we don't have an incumbent in the race. Sheriff Baca, who is the incumbent, resigned. You've got a department that's in the midst of multiple scandals. There have been at least 18 indictments so far. So you're in the midst of that scandal. Plus, you're in the midst of a department in need of reforms because of the excessive force and abuse of inmates in the prisons. You have profiling going on in certain parts of the county. And you've got hiring practices that have been called into question. So this is a very important election because it will determine the course of the Sheriff's Department in the future, which is, by all accounts, in need of changing from every angle.
What happens if no candidate emerges from the first round with more than half of the vote?
Well, then they'll go into the November primary. And I expect that to happen. There are 7 candidates. Out of those, you have, I guess, 5 candidates, even though I believe Jim McDonnell is the front runner by most polls. It all depends on the voters' preference and what they think the ultimate recipe for change is.
So can you tell us some of the highlights of the candidates' promises so far?
Well, so far it seems like Lou Vince wants to reform the philosophy of the jails to prepare people once they leave. Patrick Gomez wants to do accountability and hold everyone accountable for their actions, and they all sort of carry that theme. Todd Rogers, he said he got rid of Friends of the Sheriff. He says he set up a website that he monitors for whistleblowing, more or less. You have Paul Tanaka, who wants to keep certain policies in place but wants to change others. You have Jim McDonnell, who wants to bring into place what he's put in at the Long Beach Police Department reviews of excessive uses of force and officer-involved shootings.
Do you think that whoever is elected will have the power to change things, or do you think that infrastructurally it's not going to be possible?
They'll definitely have the power because they're in charge of the department. They are in charge of their own budget, so they can use their budget to put in place reforms and to improve the department as they wish. They can also bring in their own command staff and own upper staff, which can ultimately affect the overall direction of the department.
What should be the priorities of the next new sheriff?
Well, I think accountability, which all the candidates have stressed, they have to make sure that the racial profiling goes away. They have to reform the hiring practices, change the abuse in the jail system, the excessive use of force, and ultimately they'll have to deal with the overall prison population, helping with the mental health treatment within the prison system.
Do you think that the department is on its way to recovering, or do you think that it is still plagued by scandals that will take years to overcome?
Well, they're definitely still plagued by scandals. Because as we saw, we've had more coming out in the last few weeks, even with Sheriff Baca gone. However, the new undersheriff has made great strides in reforming the department, so there are already reforms underway, and it will just be up to the next sheriff to continue putting those into place and to put new ones into place. Personally, I think these candidates realize it as well, that the only way they'll be elected is if they do change, because people are so upset with the department.
Okay, well, we'll be watching the race closely. Thanks very much, Max Schwartz, for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hold on to your butts, society. Next up is Culture Clash, the segment where arts and culture reporter Samir Suri blows up popular trends. This week, he's looking at queer icons in entertainment, beginning with Shameless ending its fourth season on Showtime.
Now that this past season of Showtime's Shameless is wrapped up, I can say with finality that the show has given us the best written, best acted queer characters in the history of television.
Shameless is...
Come on, G.I., pound me like an Iraqi soldier!
Now that Shameless is on hiatus, gay culture has been consigned to a 9-month flatline. Who are we supposed to look at now? Look at the gay icons out there. Madonna? She's been classified by the Center for Disease Control as a hotspot. I don't want to know from Madonna. Meanwhile, Elton John, there's a man who's ballooned. Wonder why he adopted a baby when he was 60. Look at his chest. The man is lactating. And can you feel... Who adopts white babies in this day and age? You can't even wear them in public after Labor Day. Streisand is the last of the greats to stay great. I saw her in that concert of hers at the Hollywood Bowl, and it was magnificent. There have not been so many Jews and homosexuals crammed into one building since the Allies liberated Europe. But she's all that's left, and it's not just in music that we lack great divas. Look at the grand dames of politics. Think of the ex-first ladies. Certainly, there's nobody left as fun as that Betty Ford. My God, to see that reflection in the mirror every day, I'd be an alcoholic too. My point in all this is that as an observer of, and a participant in, gay culture, I can tell you it's nowhere near as fun as it once was. Except when Shameless is on. Watch this show, you'll thank me. I'm Samir Suri, and this has been Culture Clash on Annenberg Radio News.
Who makes the showbiz world go round? Interns, that's who. Logan Healy sat down with USC senior Evan Leach. He's about to graduate, and he's already got his start by working with a major movie star.
I intern at Appian Way, which is Leonardo DiCaprio's production company.
So tell me a little bit about that job and what you do there.
So I'm one of Mr. DiCaprio's assistants. My job is mainly to look through the scripts and see which ones are fitting for him, but I also do a variety of things for the production of his movies. Right now we're in post-production for some of his things, and so I'm working with a lot of the editors and distributors for the movies that are going to come out.
When you kind of get a script, what's kind of your process in determining if it works for DiCaprio?
Well, first of all, we mostly check to see if the scripts are something that we're interested in. So he has categories that he wants to do, like he wants to do crime movies. He doesn't really look for comedies, for instance. So we eliminate all those. We don't even read those. And then when we're reading a script, we see if we can imagine him as the character, if the plot flows well. And we meet with a writer to see if we can work with him.
Talk to me about a a script that you have kind of worked with and then he ended up doing it. Have you had that happen to you yet?
We're actually working on a script called The Revenant, and I wasn't the one that found it, but I was there, and it's an interesting process because interns are the ones who read it, and you know, usually they seem unimportant, but if we really recommend it, they pass it around to everyone in the company, and then we pass it off to Mr. DiCaprio, and he goes through it, and if he likes it, then we move forward and meet with the writer. But he's really starting to branch out. I mean, if you look at Calvin Candy, his character in Django, that was way out of his range, but he really enjoyed it.
Yes!
Gentlemen, you had my curiosity, but now you have my attention.
So how does this kind of play into like what you want to do in the future?
So my goal is to be a producer, and our main goal is to find a project when it's just in its beginning stages, and our main job is to sell it. We're basically businessmen, and the thing we're selling is just movies. It's easier, of course, if you work in a company where Leonardo DiCaprio is your client. But, you know, if you're a good enough producer, you can sell anything.
What are some of your favorite Leo roles? And why?
My favorite Leo role is probably in The Aviator. I think because that was like the first time that everyone got to see how he could act.
Some of those fine folks down there still call me Junior. You tell them it's Mr. Hughes now.
But Gangs of New York is really up there just because it's entertaining. It's Scorsese. I mean, he works with Daniel Day-Lewis in it, and it's all about just like this gritty family revenge. I don't know, something about like the seriousness that he brings to the role, and it's just such an adventure.
There's more of us coming off these ships every day. 15,000 Irish a week.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
I like the Natural History Museum because it's kid-friendly.
It tells about all like history and stuff, and like you could see really old things.
There's a lot of pretty butterflies, even a monarch.
There's lots to see and explore. It's a fun place to spend an afternoon where your kids can ask you questions and get answers, and you learn a lot.
Sonic City!
Today will be the 75th anniversary of Los Angeles Union Station. To celebrate the occasion, the historic train depot will hold live musical performances in the ticket concourse, and people can get a free ride to the Glendale Southern Pacific Railroad Station. The event is working in partnership with National Train Day, which is officially next Saturday, May the 10th. When memory and the ability to speak fades for Alzheimer's patients, sometimes creative impulses still linger. Alexis Mason reports on a Los Angeles nursing home that uses art therapy to help Alzheimer's and dementia patients.
When the moon hits you right like it repeats a bite.
Every Tuesday at noon, Guillermo comes in to sing to the Alzheimer's and dementia patients living at Raya's Paradise.
Did you ever know that you might?
That was Megan chiming in as Guillermo stops every couple of lines and allows the residents to finish the lyric. Raya's Paradise is among the dozens of assisted living facilities in California. What sets it apart is its unique treatment of Alzheimer's and dementia patients through the arts. Perry Mathis, the daughter of a Raya's Paradise resident, elaborates on why the facility caught her attention.
As soon as that music starts playing, the silent woman in her wheelchair starts singing timeless songs.
More so than the singing, Perry Mathis says that her mother, Natalie, comes to life and has moments of lucidity when she participates in the Memories in the Making program.
the painting class spearheaded by Julie Vogel. She set the table with 6 sets of paint, 6 cups of water, 6 canvases, and a beautiful pot of flowers that would serve as the residents' inspiration.
What color now, Albert? You have red where it touched down.
The residents were then wheeled in, and the art class started at 12 o'clock sharp. Once everyone was situated and comfortable with my presence, the painting began.
Jacqueline, that is the most beautiful painting I have ever seen.
These are the moments that Julie says can only be brought out through art. I was standing over Natalie's shoulder as she glanced at the spring flowers that were the inspiration for today. A moment of lucidity came over her, and she recalled her younger years with her father.
Oh, I love flowers. Everything about flowers. My father was a gardener. He decided that since he made such a beautiful yard at home, that he would take his lawnmower and go somewhere and got jobs working for movie stars.
The paintings created by these Alzheimer's patients will be collected and auctioned for proceeds that will go to the Alzheimer's Association. Alexis Mason, Annenberg Radio News.
It's a historic day here at Annenberg Radio News and at the Annenberg School at USC. This is our very last newscast in our current studio. In the fall, Annenberg will open a brand new state-of-the-art multimedia building. A cornerstone of the new Wallace Annenberg Hall will be a media center featuring a converged newsroom of radio, TV, and digital news. Sarah Zahedi and JJ Maldonado asked students and faculty their thoughts on what's to come.
Students sticking around next year say they're excited and anxious about the new Wallace Annenberg Hall that is close to completion.
It's a very positive thing, like with the way journalism is changing, that we're getting a new building at this time.
They're promising all these new technological advances, and I'm excited to see those and just to see the new facility in general.
I'm really excited about the new Annenberg building. Super stoked to take classes and see, you know, all the cool new resources that we get.
It seems most students and faculty can't wait for the new building, especially for its much-needed student benefits.
Even if maybe we fit well into this building right now and perhaps people think that it's overkill to have us spread out, I think that it will encourage growth within the program and then more students will come.
Though, some say they'd rather have the money spent elsewhere.
I'm excited that Annenberg is continuing to look forward and incorporate more technology into our programming, but it does bother me that so much money is being put into a new structure when we have a perfectly functioning one now.
Joel Zink, production supervisor for Annenberg Radio News, says the building will provide more space and offer a new media center.
Annenberg just grown so much that just the current confines of our building, we've really outgrown it. And so the new Wallace Annenberg Hall is going to be something where we're going to have a lot more space to include more people, groups that make sense to have together, such as in the new media center. We're going to have Annenberg Radio News next to Annenberg TV News, next to Neon Tommy, and these people can collaborate. And that's really what the whole building is about.
Zink says the new building will let students be more creative with its multimedia merging capabilities, mimicking a real-life professional media environment.
So we looked at the existing studios for like NBC, ABC, and we're using not just the physical space in terms of having separate studios, separate control rooms, but also the technology that goes into them.
The Wallace Annenberg Hall will open in the fall, but some classes will continue to take place in the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. JJ Maldonado, Annenberg Radio News.
We check in with Camille Rakiestas to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Camille.
Hi, Bryony. Seniors are getting ready for USC's annual fountain run tonight. Find out which fountains you can actually run through and what DPS wants you to know. And the government is investigating sexual violence at more than 50 universities across the country. And USC is on the list. What students from some of these universities have to say. Tune in for these stories and more coming up on ATVN at 6 on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Camille.
Thank you.
Bruno the police dog is headed home tomorrow. The dog was shot in the face in March during an investigation with Anaheim police. He has since undergone weeks of medical treatments. Fundraisers have helped pay for the German Shepherd's medical expenses. Now Bruno will head home with his human partner, Officer R.J. Young. That's it for this Thursday and for this semester in this building and in this booth. A big thanks for all our Thursday staff. Ella Bernal, Lenza Bogale, Stephanie Case, Sam Dawn, Denise Guerra, Logan Healy, Emmanuel Martinez, JJ Maldonado, Jenna Pittaway, and Sarah Zahedi. Our production assistant is Lexi McAvinci. Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment, and the newscast producer is Victor Figueroa. The executive producer is the soon-to-be-married Catherine Davis. Our spiritual advisors are Karen Lowe and Willis Siedenberg. Our superhero production supervisor is Joel Zink. We'll be back in the fall semester in our new studios in Wallace Annenberg Hall. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Bryony Ng.